November 2015, I joined 27 volunteers from Cambridge who were heading for Calais in France. The convoy was organized by the Cambridge-Calais Refugee Action Group, a unit of well-organized, efficient, and dynamic individuals. They've been raising money, collecting and sending donations to the camp and sending volunteers since the breakout of one of the worst humanitarian crises Europe has ever known. It stands at our doors, with more and more refugees arriving every month. Currently, although the numbers are blurry, the jungle, as it is called, is said to host between 3,000 and 4,000 men, women and children. This report is a very small attempt to raise awareness, compassion and solidarity. It is also a tribute to the many volunteers met on the ground, too numerous to be recalled each by their name, but to whom I'd like to dedicate what follows. On the road to Calais, in the ferry crossing the Channel, the atmosphere is festive. A Christmas fair is taking place for passengers who are making the trip to buy cheaper food and products on the French side.
We'd like to advise passengers that we do have Wi-Fi on board this vessel. You can purchase a connection code at any till point on board for any information, coming up to the information desk on their case.
An atmosphere at odds with the hub of activity that we discover in the warehouse run by L'Auberge des Migrants, one of the French charities providing help in the camp. Keith, who was my driver on the way to Calais, was keen on recognising the wonderful amount of work accomplished by L'Auberge des Migrants.
There were some really incredible people, particularly those who are there on a more permanent basis, to have put aside whatever they were doing in the UK or in France, and to just go over and organise, whether it's organising people in the warehouse or organising distributions or organising help for refugees, whatever that may be. It's not like clockwork, because it can't be, because so many people who are volunteers like us just come for a weekend, and it takes half a day for us to actually get up to speed with what we're doing. So they just have to be really sort of calm and patient with people, and as long as there's someone on each section who knows what they're doing, then it's fine, and you know, things are the resources are getting to the refugees, which is the most important thing.
The warehouse was bustling with activity. This is the place where many donations arrive and need to be sorted. From clothes to tents and medicine and food, everyone remains well employed as the hours go by. Here is how Daniel, a volunteer from Cambridge, and then Julie from Camberley, described it.
Well, in Calais there's the big warehouse and there's the camp. I spent both days in the warehouse sorting shoes, blankets, mats, tents, hygiene packs, all kinds of things. So it's a big pile of donations that come from all places. They have to be sorted, they have to be packed. One has to get out the clean stuff and the rubbish stuff and put packs together so that people can actually use the things that was donated.
Was it like a chaotic situation, or was it very much organized?
Well, visually speaking, it looks first like a big chaos, and more like a waste dump than an organized system, but underneath there's a lot of organization. Mm-hmm. So I think one has to keep in mind that things come in boxes, donated, and you have to unpack them, and then it becomes a bit of a mess in appearance, but it becomes very efficient once people are in working groups and sort things out, and then at the end of the day you have well-organized piles. But it's a very dynamic process, so it's at the start of the day it's chaos, at the end of the day there's an organized pile.
Did you feel you made a difference?
I can't say for the refugees, because I didn't go into the camp, so I can't really see what the difference is there. But I think for the warehouse, yes, we did a big difference. We had, in the end, we sorted all kinds of materials. In the end, we had a ready piled pack of sleeping bags, mats, blankets, hygiene packs, socks. And so all these things will be put together in welcome packs and can be handed out. So we made life a lot easier for the next people who come and put the things together.
Yesterday in the warehouse, I was sorting out clothes and organizing them into sort of women's clothes, men's clothes, sizes, and boxing them all up so that they could go out for distribution. Mm-hmm. And This morning I've been sorting out food, again just splitting it all up into whatever it is that it can be packed up into food parcels.
Sure. According to you, what do these people need really in terms of clothes and food? And what sort of advice would you give for those who want to donate?
So I think blankets and warm clothes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Apparently they really want sugar. Sensible food that they can use on a campsite. You know, some of the donations that I've seen are not so helpful, but tinned food, rice, pasta.
Would you encourage people to give those things you mentioned?
Yes, definitely. I mean, the tents, blankets, warm sleeping bag, everything. I mean, anyone who needs things and has been camping in winter, that's what they need. So they don't need a broken tent, they need a tent that can actually stand and hold in the wind and the wet weather. Mm-hmm. They need a warm sleeping bag, not just a sleeping bag that people want to get rid of, but something warm and they would actually survive the night.
A lot of volunteers have come from many different places and from many different backgrounds, giving to the place a sort of cosmopolitan air. I've thus met Chiara from Italy, who shared a point of view on the situation.
I think that a big problem is also that the information is not really well done, because from Italy, for example, all my friends in Italy don't know about this problem or don't know it properly. They don't know about the existence of these refugee camps. Italy is not very far from France, so I think it should be like news that at least arrives to Italy. Migrants arriving to Italy, they are not stuck in Italy. They can move and they can just leave Italy more or less wherever they want, in the sense that if they ask for asylum they have to stay in Italy, but they are free to move and like they can reach Austria and maybe they will be sent back, because if they have already done asked for asylum status, there is the Dublin Convention who oblige them to stay in Italy and to receive the asylum status from Italy, because it's the first country where they got the fingerprints. But at least they can move. They are not stuck in a camp built by themselves. Or they are in detention center, which are, they are called reception center, but they are kind of prisons. But it's not like a camp in the mud, at least. So I think that even if Italy maybe is focused on its problematics, it's a shame that the information is not arriving like to a really neighbor country at least.
And how come that you are here today in Calais to help? What prompted you to come?
I currently live in London, so I mean I'm living in the UK now. Mm-hmm. So I just joined a group from Cambridge, because with some friends we decided just to come to do something. Even if it is not, we won't resolve the problem, but at least it's something.
When did you arrive and how long are you staying here?
I arrived yesterday and I leave tonight, so just for the weekend.
And so far, what have you done? Did you stay in the warehouse?
Yes, we stayed in the warehouse yesterday morning, and in the afternoon we went to the camp. We met another volunteer who has been volunteering since a couple of months. So we have been with him and he introduce ourselves to the refugees living there, because with my group of friends we have the aim of doing a blog to speak and to spread information about what is happening in Calais. So we interviewed the migrants, we spoke with them, we had dinner with them, and we participated to a show that they were doing in the dome. It was a performing show, so it was mainly story sharing and storytelling with them. And today we are just distributing food and sort out clothes.
How would you describe the atmosphere in the warehouse?
I think it's a nice atmosphere for sure. Like everybody just don't know the other people who are working with her or him, but everybody is just friendly and just trying to helping and just trying to do his or her part.
There were many, many volunteers from various parts. I don't remember the names of all of them, but a lot of them are very motivated. They really care about what they're doing and they want to make a difference. So I think most people there, we are there for the same purpose. And so it's a sort of communion, or you feel you're working together.
My name is Keith Hatton. I'm a primary school teacher and I live in Cambridge.
So you've been my driver this weekend to go from Cambridge to Calais and then back from Calais to Cambridge. What prompted you to volunteer to be part of this group?
Sort of August time, it became really clear in the news that there wasn't a lot happening for these refugees and conditions weren't good enough, and the governments of both countries weren't really doing enough, and just wanted to do something, and just contacted people on Facebook generally, and people in Cambridge were extremely kind of energetic about it, and I've just kept in touch with them about it, and eventually because they organised coming over on the ferry, just got involved and got in contact with lots of different people, and just wanted to do something.
As we walked through the jungle, it was not rare to find other volunteers and to exchange a few words with them.
This is my first time.
Okay. It's our second time.
Mm. Well, it's got lots of English people here. That's nice to see them. Yeah. Not any French here,
She's French.
I'm French. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I'm from Cambridge. She's living in England.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks for that. But it should be more French people. Because this is France. This life in Central Europe, you can't believe this, is it?
Yeah.
Well, the city centre or town centre is not far away, and it's very nice.
It's different, isn't it? Yeah.
Where do you come from?
London.
London, yeah. Okay.
And what are you helping? Are you just helping with the...
Yeah, we bring some, about 15 tons of stuff.
Really? Wow.
Clothes.
Yeah, yeah.
Curtains.
Okay.
Nappies, shoes.
Yeah, nice.
Manpower is strongly needed within the camp on the ground. Certain skills in particular are invaluable in the jungle. Can you build wooden shelters? Do you have any medical training? Do you feel like teaching English to people in the camp who don't speak it? And so forth. I spoke to one of the volunteers helping to build small wooden houses as we left the camp at the back of a van.
How long did it take to build such a house?
Actually, it didn't take us very long. Yeah. It probably took us a couple hours to knock up the one we built this afternoon.
Okay, but did you create a simple bit?
Yeah, so what they do is they pre-fabricate the panels. So you basically make 6 large panels and 10 small panels.
Mm-hmm.
2 small panels have windows and one has a door in it. And basically, you have 3 large panels to the floor, the 10 pieces go around the walls, and then the other 3 sit on the roof, and then they fit this corrugated steel pitched roof on the top.
Yeah.
And that's about it, really. So, they've got these jigs in the workshop, which they just... You know, you lay timbers on them, which prefab, to actually assemble the pieces,
yeah.
And they're all done pretty quick with the nail gun, so we just kind of knock them together, and they go out with all the bits on one of these trucks, and I don't know how they allocate them to people, so I don't know how they decide who gets one. But,
and it's donated materials or money raised?
I think it's probably more that money raised.
Yeah, I guess you have it designed.
Designed the working too, so you know, specific size of timber, specific thickness of hardboard and all that kind of stuff. So I think the charity that runs it, which is a French charity, those guys, they basically came up with the design.
Yeah.
So it sounds like it's very much being funded by donations to them, but I honestly don't know. But we brought over materials because Michelle had sent the shopping list. So she wanted hinges and bolts and padlocks and all these kind of things. You know, extra little things that were needed for the build.
And back in England, are you like a builder? Do you have skills?
No, I'm a salesman.
Okay.
But,
so that's different.
Everyone's
a builder, I think.
Yeah, well, this is it. I think you don't need to be anything more than a keen DIYer to build these things.
Okay.
It helps if you've got... I mean, stuff that I've done in the past has obviously helped. You know, I do a lot of stuff at home, so, you know, I'm quite good with timber, which was part of the reason I decided to come. But there are people that are helping to build who don't have any real building experience.
Yeah.
That can just get involved, you know. It's quite easy to direct somebody who's got the head screwed on, so...
The other main task is with food or clothing distribution. This is when I discovered the camp itself. During the weekend, it rained heavily all day, turning the camp into a swamp. There were gusts of wind that tore apart refugees' tents. As we drove within the jungle, trying to avoid potholes, I began to measure the extent of the dehumanization these people are going through, living on muddy grounds, very often with no appropriate clothing and shoes, among rubbish, waste, litter, and the shelters that can burn during the night because of their makeshift heating. It looked bleak and depressing. And there was also the sound of the camp itself, snatches of music, the roaring of the wind, the clank of some hammers, and also occasional shouts that said, "Line, line." This is a sort of rallying cry among people in the camp. It is the signal that food is going to be distributed and that people need to make a line in order to get a parcel of food. We wandered through the camp in search of families to give them the food parcels we had been preparing in the warehouse.
Hello. We're looking for families.
Families?
Yeah, families. Children? Over there?
Thank you. Mostly yesterday we were giving out food parcels to young men, and I had thought that I had more of a heart for like the women and children and the vulnerable people, but I realised yesterday that the young men are also really needy and incredibly grateful, and they were just that, really grateful. They smiled a lot and they were very welcoming, and they just said lovely things to us, how lovely they thought the English were, which is just humbling, isn't it?
In spite of its chaotic aspect, there is some logic in the organisation of the camp. Here is how Tina, an experienced volunteer on the ground, described it.
I'm volunteering via the auberge, the immigrants. Mm-hmm. So, and because I've been here a while, I liaise with the ladies that run the family area, the kids and mums, mm-hmm. so making sure they've got food and firewood and lights.
How many people would you say are there?
There's 30 caravans, so that's probably in the region of 120 people mm-hmm. over in that area. Mm-hmm. And then most of my time, if it's based in the warehouse, is around the food distribution mm-hmm. and organising the food that comes in, making sure it gets out, making sure the food, also the fresh food, gets to the volunteer restaurants who are feeding hot food to refugees mm-hmm. every day.
How long have you been here?
This is my third week, but it's in splits. So I've done a week and a half and a week and a half, and I'm here for another week and a half. So this time round, I'm here for 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Have you witnessed any difference during those 3 weeks in terms of volunteering? And also, has the camp grown?
Yeah, the camp's grown. When I was first here, we think there was probably about 7,000 people here. I'm estimating that's probably grown by about 1,000 in the past 3 weeks, my rough estimate. Mm-hmm. The camp is still incredibly safe and friendly, but as the day draws on, people start to get a bit more nervous and anxious about the weather. Mm-hmm. So the atmosphere in the camp has changed since the weather's got worse. Mm-hmm. Wet and rainy and cold.
I've noticed a lot of shops to run the camps. Is it like a normal thing? I mean, people tend to live a sort of, they try to live normal lives.
Relatively normal. You've got, the shops are run by the refugees, mm-hmm. By the savvy ones. And then you've got the restaurants, you've got discos, you've got a couple of churches, the school is operation, you've got the library, hospital. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a functioning, to some weird degree of functioning. It's a functioning town.
Do you need volunteers to work in the school, in the library?
I think some, by some sort of miracle, the timetable of the school and the teachers works really well. Mm-hmm. Volunteer teachers generally come from England and Belgium and France. They're timetabled to do a particular lesson. Mm-hmm. Seems to work well.
and so there's a majority of men.
Yeah, the demographic has changed slightly. It used to be predominantly sort of probably 18 to 30 year old men, but now there are a lot more older people that you will see around. There's the families, so the demographics have shifted a little.
What do you need most right now?
Donations, I don't know what's mostly required. That's something that the auberge in Calais would know better than me. Mm-hmm. Sleeping bags are always needed, blankets are always needed, plastic is always needed.
Plastic
over tents. Okay. Building materials, mm-hmm. trying to get people out of tents and into proper, more stable structures because mm-hmm. of the weather. Volunteers are always, always needed. Some people don't cope very well with being on the camp longer term. Mm-hmm. So people that are, you know, mentally and emotionally strong enough to deal with it, they're always welcome. Mm-hmm. And then people in the warehouse.
Yeah. And you mentioned the fact that the atmosphere had changed a little bit over the past few days because of the weather. Mm. Has there been any, I don't know, incidents, or is it a safe place?
Yeah, relatively safe place. I mean, for 8,000 desperate people, there's... You know, I've done a night shift. I did a night shift here on Thursday night, so it meant that I was in one of the caravans at one of the entrances. People knock on the door if they're late arrivals for tents and sleeping bags and mats and some food. We had people knocking through the night, didn't have any trouble at all, two women sleeping in the caravan. Mm-hmm. But there are things that happen, and there are gangs, and there are issues. But generally, it seems to be within the refugee cultures. I know that some of the volunteer kitchens have been broken into a few times, so they now run out of containers. So you're kind of chasing your tail a little bit. It's not too bad. It's just more the desperation as the night draws in, people knowing that they're going to be cold and potentially hungry, that people start to get a bit anxious.
In the jungle, you may cross people from Syria, Iran, Iraq, Afghanistan, Somalia, Eritrea. You may meet Kurdish people, Muslims, Christians, families, men, women, children, pregnant women. There's a dome in the camp, a shelter enabling refugees to express themselves through art. There's a vaccination center, a school built miraculously by the refugees themselves, a library called the Jungle Book, two churches, a mosque. Life goes on, but migrants in the camp have the feeling they are stuck for good in there.
Where do you come from?
Iran.
Oh,
Persian.
Okay. I'm from France.
France.
France, yes.
France, beautiful. Good. Very, yeah. Very good.
How long have you been here?
You're trying to say.
Yes.
5 weeks.
So, yeah, there's an Afghan area, a Sudanese.
There's
one.
An Afghan, a Sudanese, Eritrean, Iranian.
Mm-hmm. Kurdish, maybe, also?
Yeah. I think the Iranians and the Afghans seem to be then split into Farsi and Kurds. I'm not culturally aware enough of how that all works. And then the family areas seem to be quite a combination of culture. Mm-hmm. Because they've come together because they're families.
Kurdish, no Daesh. Kurdistan, Daesh, top. Peshmerga. Yeah.
Their money that's going around.
Yeah, it's not a poor camp. There's quite a distinction between the people that are running stuff and generating money. Obviously, then you've got the black market, which generates money for people that haven't got very much money to go spending in places like this.
Yeah.
You've got people. I was there were the Eritrean lady. I was asking her about where the father of the baby is. He's in Sudan. And it was £5,000, $5,000 to get her here.
Right.
From all the costs of coming here. Well, they've lost their homes, there's nothing to sell immaterial goods.
But to get them across a sea in a boat that's going to sink, that sort of thing.
Spend all that money and then come here. Yeah.
And they still smile and they still have hope and blows your mind.
Is your feeling that everybody that's here wants to get across to the UK?
80%. There's a decent amount that are happy to stay in France. And the French authorities are building, you didn't really see it, but there's a massive, great big construction site, area over in there.
They are actually doing that now.
I think they're putting the container.
They're putting the container building up, but that's only for 1,500 that want to claim French asylum.
Right.
Australian lady, she said, I said, are you you know, having a baby in France, where you claim asylum in France? And she said, only 50, roughly, she said, I think 50% of asylum applications from Eritrea are successful. She said, so she wants to try for England. She tried the train not a couple of nights ago.
Pregnant lady.
6 months pregnant, she's trying to jump the train.
Oh, my God. So
I've not heard of anyone actually succeeding.
They do. A few get through. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. There's a bit of a mafia run. Nighttime.
Right.
Disappearing off to the trains. People pay from here. The inexperienced ones will pay the experienced mafia. They pre-cut the fence. And there's certain points where they try and get through. It's all exploitative. Thursday night, there seemed to be probably in the region of 300 tried to go for the train. I don't know why it works that big groups go, and then sometimes not many people try to go. I don't know if that's to do with the weather or the feeling or don't know. I don't think many are successful. There's quite a lot of injuries, hand injuries and foot injuries.
Facing this disaster, one cannot help wondering what the French and British governments are doing. The police never gets within the jungle, just watch over the camp and patrols on the roads nearby. A few days ago, at the beginning of January, Xavier Bertrand, the newly elected president of the Nord-Pas-de-Calais region, announced his intention to send army to Calais in support of local police. Then, on January the 11th, charities on the ground were told that they had 3 days to move and relocate around 2,000 people because the French government was going to bulldoze a significant portion of the jungle. This is how matters stand right now in Calais. Vulnerable beings are left with nearly no basic humanitarian aid and protection. They are easy prey for trafficking or maybe worse, for extremism. Hopefully, people will keep volunteering. Hopefully, charities such as Calais and L'Auberge des Migrants will keep going. But for how
long? There's more English British volunteers than any other culture. I think probably because we feel more guilty or responsible for for the government.
You stop here. Everybody is going here.
No line.
I think for the first time in my life, I have been ashamed to be British, ashamed of my government, ashamed of the policies. I mean, I can argue with it and I can feel angry about it, but I felt deeply ashamed.
What was your incentive to go here and to help in Calais?
Because it's on my doorstep and it's wrong, and these people deserve sanctuary and safety and dignity and help and love and... What can you do? I can't sit there, not doing anything. And they're brilliant, and they're beautiful, and they're like you and me.
I can't comment on the political side. I because it's such an incredibly difficult issue. I just wouldn't know. I mean, I wish they would do more, but I've got no idea what they should do, because I can see that it's kind of a catch-22 situation.
Are you going to speak about what you've been through this weekend? Are you going to share your experience, or will you just keep it for yourself?
No, I'm going to share it. The question then always depends whether people are willing to hear what's actually going on. I know there are people that don't want to hear it. I can ask them whether they want the polite answer, and whether it was a polite question and they don't really care about the answer, or whether they want an honest answer. I think it matters.
What is the honest answer according to you?
Well, first I'm going to tell them that there's humans that have big needs, that we all as European countries have to work together to do it. So it's not a matter of, I mean, now I live in Cambridge and so I work there. It's the UK government currently doesn't want to get any refugees, or I don't know, 20,000 by 2020. The crisis is now and we have to act now. So I think building fences, it may be good for their calm, but it doesn't help at all solving any of the problems that people are there. They're humans. They ran away from war. They risk their lives. They live in terrible conditions right now, and they really need a shelter. They need to be included in the civilization. They need to be included in the society instead of being put into a cage and or some sort of open air jail. So I think if we really want to live in a peaceful world, we actually need to include them in our society and take them on with open arms rather than scare them away or put them away.
Well, I think we all feel that we wish we didn't have to do this, and we wish that the people who were in power would actually take responsibility for it and do something more. I'm frustrated by the government, but I sort of understand their motivations. I think it's a very difficult balancing act, and that, yeah, I think it's very difficult. I'm not over because of the government. I'm over because I see it on the news, and I know that I can help. So, you know, I'm just trying to make what small difference I possibly can.
When you're back in the UK, back home, are you going to, well, tell people about this weekend, this trip to Calais?
I might do, if they ask. Yeah, I haven't really... it's not like I'm keeping it a secret, but I haven't really spoken that much about it. I have to certain people, but I suppose I keep work. Work is work. But I will, I think, push a little bit for it. I would like the children to know what's kind of on their doorstep and what's happening. But it's one of those subjects, I think, that not everybody... has the same opinion as I do, so you have to be a little bit sort of gentle and careful about the way that you introduce it.
Do you think that in the media generally we are told enough of what's going on at our doors?
I think that the media, depending on which media we're talking about, they can be, it's incredibly dangerous, some of the things that they're saying and reporting. Especially to do with jihadis and migrants being involved in the Paris attacks and that sort of thing. It shouldn't be the first thing that pops up into their in their minds, and it seems to be. But these people are suffering. Yeah, they're not going to have travelled all of this way, away from a war-torn country just to kind of be on benefits in our country. You know, they're looking for a place of hope, and they're looking to start again, and they're looking for people to help them and offer some sort of friendship, and actually the sort of arms of friendship are not being offered at all. I mean, there are people like us who are volunteers, but I think that that kindness could be shown a lot more in France and in the UK.
I definitely like to go back. Mm-hmm. It will always depend on, I don't have a car, so I'm dependent on other people going, and I have to trade it off with the amount of other work I have to do, but definitely I'd like to go. I even think of if I can convince my parents to go over the Christmas break.
I'm going to try and encourage some of my work colleagues to come with me another time. I think to see it for yourself and to offer a little tiny bit of help is, to be honest, a life-changing experience. It seemed, I felt like I was doing a really big, generous thing coming this weekend, and now I'm here, I think what I'm doing is such a small thing, and I want to be able to do more. Yeah.